Boker Tov to everybody, good morning. The topic of that shiur was, I guess, was chosen because of the relevancy that this topic took place in the recent couple of years in the state of Israel, and I guess it was in the interest of the entire Jewish people that davened for the release of Gilad Shalit. I'm not sure that all of us that davened for the release of Gilad Shalit, we expected that it would take place in under these circumstances and with these conditions of the release of Gilad Shalit, but still I guess everybody is happy with the release of Gilad Shalit. But now it's time already to check halachically what are the rules, if there are, of this kind of deals that the government has done with the Hamas groups, terrorist groups, about the relating to the release of Gilad Shalit in such a price. Well, we all are used to the sugyot that are generally quoted in these occasions, and what we are trying to deliver in this shiur is to actually to prove the differences, or to try to prove the differences between the sugyot that dealt with these issues throughout the last 2,000 years and what occurs and what's relevant to us in these times since the State of Israel was established 60 years ago, and what differences does it make, if it makes, regarding to that issue. But I will try to start to summarize briefly the essence of the sugyot that dealt with this matter. So I'll start with source number one that the Gemara in Baba Batra Daf Chet brings. Amarle, I guess you have it in front of you. If not, I have a few extra sheets so that I can distribute them. Amarle Rava le Rava Barmari. Mena Milta, how do we know? What did we learn from? Damur Rabbanan, the Pidyon Shvuyim, that redeeming these captures, mitzvah rabai, it's a big mitzvah. Amar le dichti vayak yomru elecha, ana netze, v'amarta alehem ko amar Hashem, asher lamavet lamavet, v'asher lacherev lacherev, v'asher laraav laraav, v'asher lashevi lashevi. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, and now comes the main statement. Kol ha-meuchar b'pasuk, what is mentioned behind the first one is more difficult. Cherev, sword, kasheh mimavet, is harder than regular death, than natural death. Ibaiteima kra, if you want, I can prove it from a pasuk, from a verse. Ibaiteima svara, it's reasonable. Ibaiteima svara, why is sword more miserable than regular natural death? Hai kaminval, v'hai lo kaminval. In a regular death, the body is not disgusted, but when it happens by sword, it's not nice. It's not looking nice. Ibaitei makra, and then the Gemara brings a pasuk, and then the Gemara continues. Ra'av, to starve, to die from hunger, kashe micherev, it's harder than sword. Ibaitei masvara. I commit style, because the one that starves to death, he suffers a lot before he died, and the one that was killed by the sword, it was very rapid, it was very quick. I commit style, I lo commit style, and then the Gemara brings a pasuk. Shevi. Now we come to the last word that was mentioned in that pasuk. Shevi is harder than all the others. Kulhu itnube, because the body is disgusted, you're starving from hunger, and the main issue is that you are under the hands of the goyim. That's what Rashi explains there. Shehu beyad goyim lasot bo kol cheftzo. The fact that you don't know what the goyim are going to do with you, im lamut lamut, im lacherev lacherev, im la ra'av, la ra'av. The hardest feeling is the feeling that you don't know what's going to happen to you. And this is actually the exact, precise description of the man that is under his captivities. And therefore, the Rambam, when he quotes this Gemara, says in number 2, Pidyon Shvuim is the most important mitzvah that is mentioned among the mitzvot of Chesed. It's kodem, it's prior to supporting leparnasat ha'aniim, to support the poor people, to give them food, uliksutam, and to clothe them. Ve'en lecha mitzvah gdola kepidyon shvuim. Sha'shavui הרי הוא בכלל הרעבים והצמאים והערומים ועומד בסכנת נפשות. Is hungry and is many times naked, is not clothed well and is under פיקוח נפש. His life is in danger. So therefore, whoever המעלים עיניו מפדיונו, whoever who ignores him and doesn't try to redeem this capture, הרי זה עובר על לא תאמץ את לבבך ולא תקפוץ את ידך ועל לא תעמוד על דם רעך. Well, he could not say it, he could not express the traditional behavior, Jewish behavior, towards our shvuyim better than the Rambam expressed it in this, in his language. And he passed on this in the halacha that whoever who ignores these shvuim is over on these three lavim. Lo ta'ametz et levavcha, lo tikpotz et yadcha, and lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. Because he's under, his life is in danger. Therefore, when the Mishnah brings the very famous halacha that en podim et ha'shvuim in number 3, אין פודים את השבויים, את השבויים יותר על כדי דמיהם מפני תיקון העולם, this was a dramatic change in the Jewish approach to שבויים. Because in the first time in Jewish history, the Mishnah maintains, claims to say that we are not supposed to redeem these captured in prices that are more than the regular price that people pay for this type of shvuyim, for this type of captured people. En podim et ha'shvuyim yoter al kdeid mehem. Did the Mishnah refer to cases where these shvuyim were not, their lives were not under danger? It's hard to say that, because we saw in the Gemara that every shavui, every captured person is actually under this kind of danger, because the goy that is capturing him might kill him if that's what will pay to him. So it's hard to believe that the Mishnah did not refer to these circumstances of Shvuyim, that their lives are not in danger. And still the Mishnah says, "Em podim et ha'shvuyim yoter al kdeid meh." And we have to understand why. What's the reason? Mipnei tikkun ha'olam. It's a takana that was made by the previous sages, and we have to understand what's the reason for that takana. But everybody knows to quote the first part of the Mishnah, but there is a second part of the Mishnah. Ve'en mavrichim et ha'shvuyim mipnei tikkun ha'olam. But for the same reason that you are not allowed to pay more than the price that he deserves, you are not allowed to redeem him by force, by using violence. En mavrichim, you are not allowed to take any activities that will help this captured to escape from the place where he's captured, where he's been captured. Mipnei tikkun ha'olam, because maybe next time if you try to redeem him via violence, maybe next time there won't be any chance to save this person's life, because the captures will kill him. And maybe that's the danger. It's not written there. What is the tikkun ha'olam? That for that reason, it's forbidden to try to redeem this capture by force, by using violence. But anyway, These are the two parts of the Mishnah. On one hand, we are not allowed to pray a higher price if it's required, more than the regular price in these cases, number one. Number two, we are not allowed to try to let him escape because of the same reason, mipnei tikkun ha'olam. What is the exact meaning of tikkun ha'olam? The Gemara tries to understand. What is the tikkun ha'olam that because of that reason we are told that we are not allowed to pay more? So the Gemara asks, Ibaya lehu, in number 3. Hai mipnei tikkun ha'olam. What is that tikkun ha'olam stands for? Mishum duchka detziburo. It's because the people, Aviva, I think it's for you. No. It's okay. What is that tikkun ha'olam? Is that because the people don't have enough money and we are afraid that these captures will demand too much money and the communities will be out of money? Is that the problem? Or mishum delo ligrebu velaitut fei? It's not that the community will stay out of money. The problem is that once these goyim were used to get big sums of money, large sums of money, so then they will try to do it again. What's the difference between these two reasons? The difference is very simple. What happens if a daughter or a son of a very wealthy person was captured, and this person is ready to pay what amount they will demand from him? It doesn't come on the cost of the community. It's not written in the expenses of the congregation. So on that aspect, there is no problem. The community is not left out without money. But on the other hand, this person causes for the next capture to take place. Because once they realize that they got a large sum of money for this captive, so then they will try to do it again. So that's the difference. So the Gemara says, brings the following story. Tashma, the Levi Bar Darga, it's the name of a person, Parka Lebrate, he redeemed his daughter, Betleisar Alfei Dinrei Zahav, for 13,000 Dinarei Zahav, which is considered to be a tremendous sum of money. And he's done it. So the Gemara brings it as a proof that the problem is the community that will be left out of money, not because this will persuade them to do it again. Then the Gemara says, no. Amar Abaye, Uman Leimalan de Birtzon Chachamim Avdu, who tells us that what he was doing was with the agreement, with the allowance of Chachamim. Maybe they didn't like what he has done, but he didn't ask them. So who tells you that this story, it's not a Maaseh Rav, it's not the Godel Hador that has done that? You couldn't bring a proof from that story because you don't know the facts that surrounded that story. Maybe that story took place, but it was not with the agreement of our Chacham. So the Gemara doesn't answer the question. What is the reason for, what is the explanation of the terminology tikkun ha'olam? Is it a problem of the community, or is it the problem that this will persuade these people to do it again and again? In another place, in source number 4, we are told about a very unique story, and that story takes place with one of our chachamim. So this cannot be rejected or pushed away by saying, who says that it was with the agreement of Chachamim? Because this story happened to one of our Chachamim. What's the story? Maaseh b'Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, shalach lekrach gadol b'Rom. Amru lo, tinok echad yesh b'Bet HaAsurim. There is one baby that is sitting in jail. Yefei nayim v'tov roi, u'kvutzotav sdurot tov taltalim. He looks nice. He's a good boy. הלך ועמד על פתח בית האסורים. He came over to the jail and he started a pasuk. Amar mi natan lemshisa Yaakov v'Yisrael lebozozim. And now Totinok, and this boy continued that verse. Ve'amar halo Hashem zo chatanu lo ve'lo avu bidrachav aloch ve'lo shamu b'torato. The question was, what is the reason why we suffer so much? And the answer was, because we have sinned. And that's the continuation of that, the second part of that verse. Amar, he was so astonished to see that baby that knows by heart these verses in Yeshayahu. Amar muvtechani bo shemore ora'a b'Yisrael. I'm sure that he will grow up to be a Talmid Chacham. Ha'avoda, it's a language of a swear, he swore. Einizaz mikan, I won't move from here until ad shevdenu bechol mamon sheposkim alav. I will not get out of here until I will redeem that baby. Amru lozaz misham ad shepdao bemamon arbe. Velo ayu yamim muatim ad sheora ora'a b'Yisrael umani Rabbi Ishmael ben Elisha. So the Gemara describes that he redeemed, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah has redeemed this baby, and he paid a lot of money in order to save this Rabbi Ishmael ben Elisha, that at that time it was a baby. And as you could all imagine, all the Rishonim raised the question, how could Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah do so? It's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that it is forbidden to redeem a person that is in jail by the goyim and to pay a higher price of the regular price that we are used to pay. So how come Rabbi Yeshua did not follow these instructions of the Mishnah and redeemed this baby and has done something that was forbidden according to the Mishnah? The Rishonim give about between 5 to 8 answers to that question. And I have a rule that I usually tell my students. If you see to one question more than 2 answers, it means that the question is much better than the answers. Because if the answer was so simple, so how come the Rishonim had to give 8 answers to that question? So I won't go through all the answers, but I will try to give 2 or 3 answers that will explain the dilemma that all of the Rishonim had to confront with. Taisvis gives the first 2 answers. In source number 5, Taisvis says, Ki ika sakanat nefashot podim shvuyim yoter al kdei dmehem. What Tosfos is saying is that the rules that said that you are not allowed to redeem captives when it's the price that is required is too high, this rule applies only to circumstances that this person is not, his life is not in danger. As we saw before in the Gemara in Bar Basra, Shevi, to being captured, is usually under that your life is in danger. So therefore, this terutz is not that good terutz. And the Ramban catches the Tosfos on that. And he says to him, how could you say that when the Gemara said that you are not allowed to redeem the Shvuim, it referred only to cases that the captures were not under, their lives were not under danger. The Gemara says that a regular pidyon shvuim takes place when the life is in danger. So, it's a very difficult answer. So he brings a second answer. Tosfot realized for himself that this answer was not a good answer, and he said, "Inami mishum de muflag bechokhmaya." It's not considered to be a high price because he was a muflag bechokhma. He realized that this baby will become a big Talmid Chacham, and therefore the price was not that high for him, relatively to what he was worth. This is also not a very good teretz, because the Romans didn't know that this baby is going to be a big scholar. They didn't know that he's going to be a big Talmid Chacham. They thought it's a regular baby, maybe a nice baby, but that's not a reason for them to raise the price to such levels that it will be much higher than regularly required. So this teretz is also a problem. And then the Ramban brings a third teretz in number 6. First of all, the Ramban in number 6, he quotes Tosfos, and then he rejects their position. Velo mistaber.
For you, number 5 is number 7.
Wait. It's number 8. Everything is there, but with different numbers.
I just want you to have
that. Okay, so I have that. Thank you. So, it's in number 8. He quotes Tosfos, and then he rejects him and says, "Velo mistaber, de kol shevi kutnubu." Every person that is captured, his life is in danger. Umistabra, talmid chacham, podim oto bechol mamon shebaolam. If someone is a talmid chacham, we are allowed to redeem him, and we don't care about the community, or even if they will be persuaded to do it again and again. Why? Because we don't have that much Tamidei Chachamim, and therefore we want to redeem these people. That's the third Teretz. The fourth Teretz is, I'll use mine because it's, for me it's easier. The fourth Teretz is brought up in, by you, it's in source number 11. In the last line of number 11, the Tosfos brings the fourth teretz. Inami, bishat churban habayit haya. The story of Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanania took place in the time of the destruction of Beis Hamikdash. And then the Romans captured everybody that they could, and the fact that you redeem someone will not encourage them to do that again, because they've done it anyway. By the way, this answer was brought up recently, saying that the Hamas will try to capture soldiers if they have the possibility. Doesn't matter what price they will have to pay, we will pay. They will try to do it anyway. And the way rabbis, they tried to compare to that territory of Tosfos, was saying that what Tosfos was saying actually, that in the time of the Churban, we don't have to motivate the Romans to capture Jews, because that's what they have done anyway. They were used to do this in every country, in every state that they conquered, they used to capture people. And the Ritva, you have it in source number 5, and he brings that could be that Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanania did not agree with that Mishnah, which is another possibility, that since it was a Tana, what does he say? Shloshesre, could be. And he says, right? No, I don't see. It starts, actually, in your sources, it starts in number 12, by quoting the Rashba, and he says, that it's actually a machloket between Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel and Tanakama, and actually it could be that Rabbi Shimon ben Hanania agreed with him. And that's a teretz that the Meiri brings also in number, what it is? 15. By you. Anyway, that's about the diversity between the positions in the halacha. What was paskened in the Shulchan Aruch? This is what interests us after we saw all the Rishonim. So the Shulchan Aruch brings the halacha and doesn't actually go into the details whether it applies to the situation of Sakanat Nefashot or not. You can see it. I have it in source number 19. I don't know where the number for you. I'll try to give it a look, just a minute. I think 22. 22, right? And he says in source number 22, Pidyon Shvuim Kodem Leparnasat Aniim Velikisutam Ve'en Lecha Mitzvah Gdola Kepidyon Shvuim. And then he says, V'kol Rega Shemeacher Lifdot HaShvuim, if he postpones it, if he doesn't do it as quick as possible, Have Ke'ilu Shofech Damim. So this shows that Shulchan Aruch understood that the halacha of Pidyon Shvuim that says En Podim Et HaShvuim Yoter Mikdeid Mehem applies to cases where the lives are under danger. Which means that actually the Shulchan Aruch agreed with the Ramban and did not agree with Tosfot that the rule of En Podim Et HaShvuim Yoter Mikdeid Mehem applies also to cases where the captured's lives is under danger. So if we would try to conclude from that to our case, Gilad Shalit's life was under danger, I mean, there's no doubt about this, and according to Shulchan Aruch, if we summarize the halacha, is that we were not allowed to redeem him because it's against the rule of En Podim Et HaShvuim Yoter Mikdeid Mehem. Nevertheless, all the poskim throughout the Jewish history, and you can see it in various places, in various sources that are brought up in your sheets. You can see it in number 18, in number 19, quoted the Radbaz, and quoting the Bach, that says that the Jewish tradition was actually practically to redeem people more than the price when their lives were under danger. That's number one. And number two, that a husband was allowed to redeem his wife even if the price that was demanded was higher than the regular price. And we did not care about the chashash that people might utilize that and take advantage, and to this will convince them to try to capture people again. And therefore, usually, this was the regular tradition among the Jewish people throughout Jewish history. But recently, there were a few arguments that said it could be that this was the tradition throughout the Jewish history, but still the halacha said that you should not redeem these captures even when their lives were under danger. Especially, we all remember the very famous story about the Maharam Rotenburg that did not allow the community to redeem him from jail, and actually he passed away when he was in jail, and even his body was not released until 7 or 14 years after he passed away, because he ordered the people not to redeem his body in a high price. And that's what's quoted in source number 16 in your papers, and that's what it brings there. It brings the minhag, and they were very interesting. Ve'aidna, you can see number 16, the second paragraph. Ve'aidna, anashim gomlei chasadim be'eretz tugarma, in Turkey. Ve'asmuchim lehem, podim ashvuyim yoter ve'yoter mikdeid mehem. They are redeeming people more than in the prices that are more than they deserve. Ve'aynu, שמבטרים על דוחקיו דציבורה שלהם. The people, the communities, the congregations are so generous, and they said, since the rule was established in order to prevent us from getting out of money, we are moichel, we'll forgive that, and we are willing to redeem these people. השם יוסיף על שכרם ופעולתם לפני השם צפון בעזרת השם. וגם בעוונותינו הרבים לעת עתה נתמעט ישראל בגולה. There are so few Jews in the world, ויש לחוס על יתר הפליטן. We have to make sure that the survivors will survive, שלא תכבה גלות גחלת ישראל, that the fire of the Jewish people will not be shut down. וגם לעת הזאת מכבידים על ישראל ייסורים ועינויים, and therefore we have to take care of the people even if they are requiring large sums of money in order to redeem them. And then he speaks about Maharam. He wrote in Luke, that's in Numbers. So if I would like to summarize, and this is the first part of the shiur, is there is a big dispute among the Chachamim, among the Rishonim, whether the rule of not to redeem Shvuyim in a high price, whether it applies to people that their lives is in danger. The Shulchan Aruch, the Pshat of Shulchan Aruch is that the halacha applies to these cases as well. But the tradition, as it's quoted in the Bach, in the Maharshal, and in other sources, are telling us that actually the communities used to disobey to that rule, and they used to redeem people when their lives were in danger. The question that is raised recently is the following. And the question is from both sides. On one hand, everybody knows that if you pay this high price, it could cause to sakanat nefashot to the Jews that live in Israel. And this is an element that did not exist throughout this history, the Jewish history. Because once, it's not a question of giving money, of paying money to the goyim. Here is a question of releasing murderers, of releasing terrorists. And this price, you want to save one's life, but you are putting a whole community under a danger that these murderers might do again what they have done already. Not only what they have tried to do, but what they have really done. I mean, these murders washed their hands with blood of hundreds of Jews. It's not one Jew, two Jews that were killed, were murdered by them. Hundreds of Jews were murdered by these bloody murders. So that's one question. So on one hand, we are now dealing with an issue that the Jewish history never dealt with, because the entire sugya dealt only with the question of paying money which will encourage these Romans or these goyim to do it again. This was the only question. And the answer was, the practical answer was, okay, we will redeem our captives because we don't want them to die and under these goyim or Romans, wherever, and forget the question of the money. If it will encourage them to do it again, okay, so we'll take care of it when it will happen. This was the traditional behavior. But here we have another issue. These murderers might do it again. And we have an experience. 20 years ago, when thousands of terrorists were released in Jabril deal after the Lebanon war, we know that more than one third of these terrorists came back, went back to do their terrorist activities, and they have killed hundreds of Jews after they were released. So that's one question on one hand, which makes the issue different. And a second issue which makes the issue different is that we deal now with the Jewish state, and a Jewish state has a commitment to its soldiers to try to release them, no matter what price, what way. The government has committed itself to its soldiers in order to encourage them to be ready to fight and to sacrifice their lives for the state of Israel. The state has committed itself to the army, to the soldiers, that she will try to release them no matter what price it will demand. Whether it's a bloody price, like the case of Entebbe, whether it's another price, which means releasing murderers. So these two elements differentiate between our sugya that takes place in these days from the 2,000 years of Jewish history that never had to deal with this type of question. Therefore, first of all, I want to say how proud we have to be that Baruch Hashem, we have the privilege to renew our sugyot because the situation are renewed. I mean, this is not the same issue. You know that we are going to celebrate Hanukkah in 10 days from now, and the Rambam says that, I think that the first year dealt with Hanukkah, nachon? The first halakha of the Rambam in Ilchot Hanukkah, when it tries to explain what happened in Hanukkah, it doesn't describe the miracle of the oil that was enough for 8 days, and it doesn't even describe in details the victory of the Maccabites on the Greek people. It describes the fact that Chazra Malchut LiYisrael Kim'at 200 Shana. The big issue of Hanukkah is the fact that we took back the kingdom for the Jewish people, which lasted for almost 200 years. According to Rabbi Saadia Gaon, 206 years. According to the Rambam, almost 200 years. And this is actually the climax of Hanukkah. And Baruch Hashem, 2,000 years later, we have to deal with dilemmas that refer to a Jewish kingdom, to a Jewish state. And this is a total different story, because we deal now with the issues of the commitment of the state to its soldiers that the Mishnah does not apply to. And we have to deal now, and that's unfortunately, we have to deal with these terrorists that try to attack the Jewish people. But anyway, what I'm trying to say, and I'll bring right away a few sources about it, that actually the sugya that took place 2,000 years has almost no relevancy to the current situation that we have to deal with. Because we don't deal with the prices of money, we deal with the price of murders, which might cause danger to the Jewish people on one hand, and on the second hand, we deal with the commitment of the state to its soldiers, which is already a new sugya that the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Rishonim did not have to deal with. So number one, let's give a look in source number 21. Source number 21 quotes, by me, 21, I don't know what the number by you, Arab Israeli, by you it's 24. Arab Israeli is one of the very famous rabbis in Israel. He passed away 15 years ago. He was a dayan in Bedin HaGadol. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Yeshivat Merkaz Arab. Kevan she'ele yatzu chayaleinu, our soldiers, יצאו למלחמה בשליחות המדינה, on behalf of the state, ומטעמה, הרי קיימת, exists and stands, התחייבות, a commitment, בלתי כתובה, this commitment is not written, אבל מובנת מאליה, it's understood, שכל תצדקי, that every excuse שיש בידי המדינה עליה לעשות, בגבולות סבירים, under guidelines, שאינם פוגעים בביטחונה הכללי, that does not hurt her general security, כדי שנוכל שנפדותם, כדי לפדותם במקרה שיפלו בשבי, וכשם שקיימת התחייבות במקרה של היפגעם חס ושלום במלחמה, אין לא נופל מזה החיוב לנקוט כל פעולה שהיא לשם הוצאתם מן השבי. וכיוון שמה שהמדינה יכולה לעשות בזה ומכוח החיוב שקיבלה על עצמה תמורת השירות שלהם, הרי זה כאילו הם פודים את עצמם. Our Israeli was mechadesh the following chiyush. He said the entire sugya dealt with the question, what is the commitment of the community to redeem somebody else? But the sugya never said that this person for himself could not redeem himself. And since the soldier went on behalf of the state, is considered to be like the soldier itself tries to redeem himself. And the state could decide for itself what price she's willing to pay, what's worth to pay, in order to make sure that the soldiers will feel comfortable, convenient to come again and to fight. And therefore, what is reasonable for the state to decide is reasonable for the halacha to accept. That's actually what Rav Yisrael is saying. As a matter of fact, I don't have it written, but I want to quote you a very interesting issue that was relevant recently also. Rav Avadia Yosef said recently that he was supporting that deal with releasing Jibril, releasing Gilad Shalit. And he writes a tshuva, which is quoted by you, it's the last tshuva that is written by you, number 32. He writes in that tshuva that actually it was legitimate to pay any price demanded by the terrorist, referring to the issue of Entebbe. You remember 1976, this Mivtza Yonatan, where the Prime Minister's Netanyahu brother was killed there. And Rav Ovadia Yosef says in the tshuva there that the government could pay the price that the terrorists demanded there. And then in the end of the tshuva, and this is not written unfortunately here, in the end of the tshuva, after he writes that they were allowed to pray to release terrorists in order to redeem these captured in the aircraft of Air France that was captured to Kampala in Uganda, and then he says, "Bechasdei Hashem, we hear that they were released by the IDF forces, and we are very happy with that. And Todah Hashem that they were released." When I take this tshuva usually, and I teach that tshuva, I ask the question. You just finished telling us, that they were allowed to release terrorists and not to use force. So if they were allowed to release terrorists and to release these captures from Uganda, how were they allowed to send soldiers to their death, to sacrifice their lives, to redeem these people from Uganda by force? If you say that they were allowed to release the terrorists, so how were they allowed to do a war activity in order to release them? Isn't it contradicting?
Why not either or?
Because if it is permitted halachically to release these terrorists, so shouldn't it be forbidden to put Jewish lives in danger, and not only in danger, but shouldn't it be forbidden to sacrifice these soldiers' lives in order to release these people? You could have done it in a different way.
Yeah,
which means, actually, just 1 minute, which means that actually what is said here is actually that it's under the authority of the government to decide what step to take. Which means that actually it does not write it. But actually what is written in the subtext is, forget the rabbis. The government has the authority to decide whether under these circumstances they want to do a operation in order to release these people, or they want to release the terrorists. And what are the issues that they should take in consideration? It's a political issue. It says they have to deal with the question, what's the price of the soldiers that they will pay? What's the price in the media? What's the price in the general, atmosphere, environment? What would be the moral of the soldiers? And what would be, how would the press react? Etc., etc., things that politicians take in consideration. And that's actually what he's saying, because you cannot say on one hand you are allowed to release terrorists, and then the second hand, but you can do a war operation or war activity as well, because you kill soldiers. By the way, in that time, the Satmar Rebbe that lived here in New York, He was the only Rav all over the Jewish world that said that this action of releasing the civil people in the Uganda was actually, he accused the government for being shofer damim, because he said you could release the terrorists and taking these people out. Why did you do that operation? Which became then everybody said that he's Meshuggah. But now, when you compare the situation and you ask yourself, why didn't the government do the same thing in Gaza? And you see that the answer is not that simple. Because times have changed. Maybe the intelligence was a bit different about what we know where Gilad Shalit was held. I don't know what's the real answer for the differences. But you understand now that it's not that simple to decide whether that operation then was halachically permitted. But if Rav Ovadia Yosef says that on one hand you are allowed to release the terrorists, so how come you are allowed to do this war activity as well? Which means that from my own translation is that actually what the rabbi is saying practically is forget the sugya, forget the Jewish tradition of redeeming shvuyim more and paying more a higher price, and it became not an halachic question, but it's rather a political issue. That when I'm saying political, I don't mean to say party's issue, but a political in the sense of it's an issue that the government has to decide. And the halacha says that the government has the allowance and has the authority to decide what is better for the Jewish people, with the hope that they're taking the decisions with a thought for what is good for the Jewish people and not what is good for the polls of next month.
Excuse me, but I think in Uganda the terrorists weren't held by Israelis. The terrorists from the other nations in Uganda, they asked to release the terrorists in Germany and in England.
No. Sorry, I'm wrong. They asked to release 25 Israeli terrorists. And Israel was not willing. When I say 25 terrorists, it sounds like a joke today. Now we released more than almost 1,000. Then they dared to demand 25 terrorists. That was the demand from the Israeli government. And therefore, and Israel was so courage, and Yitzhak Rabin, we have to mention his courage and his responsibility, and he has done that. Something that today it's hard to believe that the government would accept such a courage decision.
There's tremendous implications here for the government or from the government listening to the government to stop rather than to sit around and say, okay, now what's best for us? Because a from government, I would think, would listen to the Rabbanim and for Pesach.
What I've tried to say in the recent 10 minutes is that we are better off that they did not ask the Gdolim, because there is no answer that is given in the halacha for that question. That's what I'm trying to say. Because the halacha referred to an issue that was for a community as individuals. Should they release should they pay a higher price or not? Since we became a state and the question became a national issue, it's not that the Gdolim should not have to deal with this, but they really have no source to learn from. That's what I'm trying to say. That all the sugyot applied only to individuals that the community had to deal with. And once we came to the situation that the government is committed to its soldiers on one hand, and on the second hand, the government is responsible for the security of its citizens. On the second hand, once this is the situation, the Gdolim don't have too much to say about that. Because I dare to say that none of us will ask the Gdolim how to make a surgery when it comes to a doctor. And none of us will come to ask the Gdolim how to make the operation in Gaza Strip, whether we should use the tanks or should we use the paratroops or the air forces. And therefore it became a question that refers to the government as such and not to the gdolim that have to deal with the halacha when it applies to the individuals. I think that's the difference.
Didn't some of these issues come up before, like for example, at least with, in Munich, did they raise halachic issues in regard to Munich?
No, in Munich, you mean the Olympiada in Munich. In 1970, when they have the hostages in 1972,
with Golda Meir, I think.
Golda Meir, over there, it was not under our responsibility because the failure there was a German failure. The Germans did not consult even with the Israelis. They have done that activity without allowing the Israelis to interrupt them or to assist them.
Is there any basis for saying? Consulting Gdolim, not so much in terms of the Pesach, but still in terms of, in some cases, that at least some of the Gdolim are not, as you put it, looking at the polls, but really trying to see clearly what would be the final political result?
No, that's a totally different issue. It depends who is the Gdolim and on which polls he's looking. And I don't know. I don't want to sound like an apicurus, but I don't believe that the gdolim that exist in our days could differentiate their answers from their understanding. And since most of them don't understand in national strategy, none of them is aware of all the threats from all sides. I mean, none of them is exposed to the general society. I don't think that they have the tools to decide. I agree with you that the politicians are, you know, kind of nogea b'davar, but I think that since David HaMelech it exists, since we deal with people are nogea b'davar. So that's the system and that's how it works, and we hope that we have a siyata d'shmaya that Hashem gives to either to the gdolim or to the leaders to lead Klal Yisrael in a way, and we get what we deserve. I mean, Pnei Ador ke Pnei Akeleh. Well, I don't understand too much in Satmar, to be honest. But oh, you're from there. But from what I understand, I could say one thing, that the Satmar Rebbe was very consistent. I mean, and the same position that he held against Zionism led him to the position against the operation of Entebbe, saying that the value of Shfichut Damim is the highest value, and the existence of the state of Israel is causing to Shfichut Damim in Eretz Israel, and therefore he believed that this operation in Entebbe was forbidden. I could not say that when I quote Rav Ovadia Yosef, that tries to hold from both worlds, to say on one hand that it is allowed to it is permitted to release the terrorists, and on the second hand to praise the IDF for doing this operation. What I understand is actually that he means to say that the government has actually the authority to decide what is better for the Jewish people.
Didn't a Kehillah have a certain level of autonomy when it came to Sakhalot? I mean, Rav Moshe, for example, who knew that if there was a bar of the Oscar in Kehillah, would not possibly a shiloh for the community, but would only possibly for an individual. So I'm not quite sure how make the distinction between Kehillah to the state, to the government.
It's a very good question. I'll try to explain. When a community decides and has the full autonomy to decide whether they want to redeem or they don't want to redeem, as the Maharshal quotes that in Tugama, in the Jewish communities in Turkey, they decide that they will redeem despite the halacha that forbid to redeem in a higher price, the community took its decision from its own perspective as a group of 500 families or 300 families, and they decided for themselves what is their interest. Is it to redeem that poor Jew or not? They were not committed to him because he was not their messenger. this Jew that was captured or hostage, he was not their shaliach to do anything. They've done this on a private basis as an autonomy for their community. But they did not take in consideration what are the consequences for the entire Jewish world. What we cannot say about a Jewish state, because once we became a Jewish state, the state of Israel, when she accepts decisions, she has to take in consideration, number one, what will be the consequences on the Jewish people in Israel, that's number one. Number two, what will be the consequences on the Jewish world as well. I mean, we look at ourselves as a nation, not as a klois, not as a shtibel. It's not the Satmar Rebbe that has to take care for his chassidim, and the Ger Rebbe that has to take care for his chassidim. We are dealing with the nation. We are dealing with the on a national level, and this is something new for the Jewish people. And therefore, I differentiate and I distinguish between these two issues.
Is there any more contemporary analysis to this regarding the fact of the side of the argument for releasing the terrorists who are going to go ahead and we know will be murdered?
Yeah, I wanted to refer to this, and there is a tshuva of Rav Ovadia Yosef, which is not brought here. It's the same tshuva. And he says that the fact that in the current time this person is in danger is more relevant than the chances that they might bury the Shema. That's a kind of a cheshbon that he's making. But to be honest, it's just a kind of excuse, because the government has to take the decision whether we can afford, it's hard to use these words, but we can afford these chances or not. What is more dangerous for the existence of the Israeli society is the fact that maybe in 5 or 6 years terrorists will kill someone, or the fact that our soldier is still hostage. It's a question that cannot be judged only, that's what I tried to say, in halachic measures, the current danger and the future danger. It's not the exact question, because Gilad Shalit's life wasn't direct under danger. I mean, he was not supposed to die tomorrow or next week. So we really deal with future dangers, and still the decision that was taken by the government was because of what they realized that the Israeli society is able to contain.
I'm wondering what might have happened if the people would have paid the ransom. What would Maron done? Would he have stayed in prison or would he gone out?
You know that there are researchers that says, modern researchers just maintain that the story didn't happen. So I don't know to answer that question.
You know, I admire you, the morale of the soldiers is the greatest to feel safety for a country.
Correct.
In the United States, I'm sure you realize, our elite forces, the Rangers and the SEALs, have a philosophy. They leave no one behind, even dead bodies. They will do everything to bring everyone.
But not when it comes to redeem captives.
They don't get to redeeming.
No.
Not yet.
No, wait. To be very, very, when I speak with Americans, I have to be very proud with the Israeli government.
I'm not saying, I'm just...
And when Mrs. Clinton said to one of our ministers that she doesn't understand how we got to that situation, because in America, no one negotiates with terrorists of releasing Americans. And therefore, there are many of Americans that are still there in Iraq or Afghanistan or elsewhere. Nobody cares about what's going on with them. Yeah. Not in the Jewish people.
I'm talking about the SEALs and the Rangers, not the whole
army. Not the Navy. Oh, okay. We don't differentiate between units.
Thank you very much.